Arkansas has one of the highest rates of births by cesarean section in the U.S. We'll have more on one group's efforts to lower that number. Students from Northwest Arkansas take their robotics talents abroad. And UA Little Rock gears up to celebrate its 100th birthday. Those stories and more are coming up this week on the News Wrap from the Arkansas Newsroom. I'm Daniel Breen, News Director of Little Rock Public Radio. Each week, we're recapping the top stories from all across the natural state. We'll unpack the headlines, share exclusive insights, and provide the context you need to fully grasp the issues that matter most to Arkansans. That's this week on the Arkansas News Wrap, coming up right after the news from NPR. This is the Arkansas News Wrap. I'm Daniel Breen with Little Rock Public Radio. Arkansas has one of the highest rates of cesarean births among low-risk pregnancies in the nation. A year ago, the Arkansas Perinatal Quality Collaborative wrapped up an initiative aimed at lowering that number. KUAF's Aiden Dixon has more.
For Dr. Constance Chapman, an obstetrician who took part in the effort, caring for mothers has been a calling for most of her life.
The heart and focus of my desire to practice medicine has always been just wanting to help people. That's where it started. My father was sick when I was little, and just seeing how his doctors and the nurses helped him feel better, that's where it all started. And then I just somewhere developed an affinity for pregnant women, and it just never left me. So I was in about the sixth grade when I knew for sure I wanted to be an OBGYN, and it's just stuck since then.
The Arkansas Perinatal Quality Collaborative, or ARPQC, works to improve outcomes for mothers and their babies across the state. Jennifer Callahan-Koru is the executive director at the ARPQC. She says she came to Arkansas specifically to start a perinatal quality collaborative where there wasn't one. And one improvement that needed to be made was reducing unnecessary C-sections.
Cesarean births are life-saving procedures when they're medically necessary. But what we're seeing in the United States is that in the early 2000s, the rate of C-section rose pretty dramatically. And we understand from a lot of investigation into C-section rates and what are the contributing factors that a good proportion of them could have been prevented. And C-sections contribute to increased risk for different types of complications postpartum. And then where you see the highest risk are for women who have multiple C-sections. So three or four C-sections for each pregnancy. And then they're at much higher risk of very serious complications.
The reasons Arkansas sees higher cesarean rates are complex. Callahan-Koru says one major factor is a mother's health before pregnancy.
So how healthy is she? Is she at a healthy weight? Does she have other chronic conditions that might contribute to an increased risk of pregnancy complications that would result in a C-section? And that's something that we're seeing across the board nationally is increasing the proportion of new mothers who are obese or who have hypertension or develop pregnancy-related hypertension, for example. And Arkansas is particularly high in some of those risk factors. So it's the fifth highest state for obesity, and that has been increasing. So in just about a 10-year period, the birth certificate data, which includes the weight of the mother and whether it was a healthy weight or not, the proportion of women who are giving birth that were obese was 27% in 2016, and now it's 37% just 10 years later. So we're seeing a lot of increase in some of the pre-existing risk factors that can contribute to C-section rates.
The collaborative's goal wasn't simply to reduce cesarean births. Part of it was also helping providers identify situations where labor could safely continue before turning to surgery. Dr. Chapman says that often starts with healthcare workers paying attention.
Babies will tell us when during the labor process if something is wrong. Their heart rate looks different depending on what's happening. So say their umbilical cord is being compressed. Their heart rate is like a jagged V. We call them variables. So they're telling us that the cord is compressed. If mom needs some extra fluids, she might have a different kind of deceleration in the baby's heart rate. So that gives us information on what we should do. And so there are different things that you can do to manage those situations in labor, but you have to take the time to do it and not just proceed with the cesarean.
To address the challenges in front of them, the collaborative brought hospitals together from across the state to compare data. Callahan Koru says that friendly competition between participating hospitals could actually yield positive outcomes.
So just understanding how you compare to your peers can really help motivate change if you decide that, you know, you're not in alignment with best practices that are happening elsewhere and you want to make that change. So some friendly competition around helping them track their progress and then sharing with them, this is how you're doing in comparison with others. And then the other thing is really the peer-to-peer sharing. So we bring the hospitals together on a monthly basis, and the majority of those meetings involve hospitals sharing back what work they're doing, what challenges they're facing, and what solutions have worked for them. And so they do a lot of learning from each other and supporting each other in coming up with local solutions to some of the implementation challenges they might have.
The initiative's goal was simply stated. More than 70% of participating hospitals will be at or below the targeted 23.6% low-risk first birth cesarean rate. So, was the goal reached?
Unfortunately, we didn't quite get to that goal. As a state, the C-section rate were pretty much where we started. So before the initiative, we were at about 28%. And currently, at a state level, we're at 28% again. There's, you know, C-section rates tend to go up and down a bit through different, sometimes unexplained variation. But what I want to say about that is that we don't have a measure of the counterfactual. So in research studies, we're always trying to understand, you know, did things improve or not? And also, what would have happened without the intervention? So what would have happened to C-section rates without the Perinatal Quality Collaborative? Because we had every birthing hospital participate, which was wonderful participation that we're really proud of. And but, so we don't know what would have happened to C-section rates if we hadn't been supporting hospitals to make these improvements. And there's a strong possibility that C-section rates would have gone up. So they're similar to where we started, but they didn't go up. And nationally, C-section rates have been trending upwards. So I think while we don't have a measurable reduction in C-section rates, there is a strong possibility that they would have increased more in Arkansas without this quality improvement work that the hospitals were investing in to improve care for their patients.
At the end of the day, Dr. Chapman reminds us that the care all comes down to the relationship between the physician and the patient. She says that some things are worth remembering when it comes to maternal care.
We have two patients in one, and that's kind of why people don't go into OBGYN, because you want to just deal with your one patient. But we have two patients in one. So when we talk through things, we really should be using a team-based approach, like the patient is a part of the team. And we have to take into consideration what you want as much as we hope that the conversation surrounds what we know medically. And when we say, well, maybe we should try something else, it's not because we don't want to. It's not because we're trying to just get something done faster. We're considering a number of different things. And unfortunately, I think sometimes we don't do a great job of talking through those things because of time constraints, et cetera. But I think realize that your OBGYN is very excited and wants to take care of you and your baby. You're a package to us.
You can find data about the ARPQC's initiatives and statistics about C-section births in Arkansas at arpqc.org.
That was KUAF's Aiden Dixon reporting. Six students from Northwest Arkansas are traveling to South Korea to test a robot they built from Lego bricks. They'll be competing against other teams from around the world. KUAF's Jack Travis has more on Technobotics and the first LEGO League.
In a few days, a group of students, their coaches, and a fist-sized robot named Bill Frog will head out across the Pacific to Korea to compete on the world stage. They're participating in the first LEGO League Korea Open International Invitational in Jeonju, South Korea. First LEGO League is an official program that enables kids to build and test their own creations against one another while focusing on team-building skills. Dave and Jen Gandy coach the Iron Patriots Silver Team. The roster includes students from Providence Academy and Rogers and two homeschooled students. Grades range from 4th to 7th, and they operate through an organization called Technobotics, which gathers students from across the area and forms teams that compete in different STEM robotics programs. Coach Dave Gandy says he's been enthralled by robotics since he was these kids' age, but he had to wait until his undergrad to really engage with that passion.
These kids are doing this as young as third grade. So here's what's so interesting. So I got to go to MIT. Well, one of the professors there, Professor Woody Flowers, is one of the people that actually invented the first robotics competition along with Dean Kamen and a few other folks. So he was one of my professors at school. And he figured out how they saw how great this robot competition was at MIT and figured out how to translate it even younger. And part of that is by allowing kids to use Legos. It allows them to focus less on the very low-level parts of engineering, up on the higher-level pieces. So instead of having to engineer an actual, you know, a switch that does something, you can use some off-the-shelf Legos so that you don't have to spend so long doing physics and some other basic things that are really that take all of your time.
The teams build pre-programmed robots, so no one's behind it with a controller, and they design it and program it to do a specific task or mission. Each year, the league centers tasks around a certain theme or industry. This year's was archaeology.
They had to invent something to help archaeologists do their jobs better. And so the team went out and did research, talked to actual archaeologists in the field, and then came up with an innovation project, a way to help those archaeologists.
But completing the mission is only one part of the competition. Judges also score teams on how they present their robots, the originality of their innovation projects, and how well they demonstrate core values, like teamwork.
So the funny thing is they measure the teamwork portion along the way with those other three portions of it. So the robot design, presentation, they really have some things they're looking for in there around how your team works together. But the only way you're able to create a really great presentation is by everybody on that team being able to work together to begin with. There's so much work to be done, you really got to spread it out. Everybody does the work and everybody helps out, right? And so really that's one of the things I love most about this program is in the real world, engineering, your engineering skill is only going to be 25% of as an outcome in life anyway as an engineer. The rest is how you're able to interact and work with others, and this program helps you focus on that so much.
And this specific team had to work hard outside of the competition to make it to the World Championships. Co-coach Jen Gandy says they had to raise roughly $30,000 to get to Korea and achieved that goal through old-fashioned fundraising tactics, like a GoFundMe campaign, tabling farmers markets, making pitches in person.
Door to door to local businesses, and just walked into businesses all around Bentonville and chatted with business owners and just really got to tell their story a lot, which was so much fun for them. And I think they going into this were feeling kind of nervous about how are we going to raise this? This is such a huge amount of money. I mean, raising almost $30,000 or more than $30,000 in the end. For, you know, six kids in fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh grade, like that just felt kind of insurmountable. And I think once they started and started getting just such positive feedback from the community, so much encouragement, you just saw the kids getting more and more excited every time. So I actually missed the fundraising part of it. Now that they're done, I feel like it was just so team building and so community building and just so encouraging for them.
It's the teamwork portion, but it's also the storytelling. That's great. You've got a thing that can change the world, but until you can tell the world about it, it's not going to get unlocked. And so what these kids learned to do was, it was so great watching Hannah. I think she was probably our best fundraiser because she talked about like she had a way that she would interact with people in a really natural way. And then she would bring them in and she would tell the story. And she got so good. Basically what she was doing, she didn't even know what she was doing sales. She's fifth grade. She's the girl, the one girl on the team, and there are five boys. And she, it was, you know, she ran circles around them with this, which was so neat to see.
And of course, there's another member to this team, the robot. The Iron Patriots call theirs William, or Bill Frog, because of his squat design. Dave Gandy says he's about the size of a grapefruit and is the product of a function-first design approach.
And what they figured out by looking at all the missions this year and really studying them early on was they could do almost everything they needed to do with just a hammer. So they basically built this robot arm with a little hammer on the end, and they use it to hit stuff. They use it to lift. They use it to drag. They use it to do all these really neat things. One of the guys had figured out, oh, we can solve this mission in this way. So he built this attachment that had probably a couple hundred pieces on it, and it worked really well. It was great. And then Hannah came over. She looked at it. She took the robot arm. She flipped it over the other way, and she added one single pin to it. And she figured out how to get it to do the same job with one single pin. And so we cheered because we figured out how to do it with fewer pieces, right? And if it wasn't for the work of the first kid, you know, solving the hard part of how are we going to, the really, really hard part of how are we going to do this, we'd never have gotten to the next level is how do we do it even simpler?
You can learn more about the Iron Patriots Silver First LEGO team by visiting KUAF.com. And if you're interested in getting your student involved in a local robotics program, check out technobotics.org for more information.
That was KUAF's Jack Travis reporting. As the country gears up for its 250th birthday, a Central Arkansas college is also marking a significant milestone. UA Little Rock is celebrating its 100th birthday next year, but celebrations are already underway. I spoke with the university's Chief Communications and Marketing Officer, Carrie Phillips, about what's in store.
So UA Little Rock was originally started as Little Rock Junior College right at 100 years ago. You know, the community recognized that the town was growing, the town was becoming a vibrant city, and they needed a university here. And so they started what at that time was Little Rock Junior College, and then it went on to become Little Rock University, and then now UA Little Rock. And so we're really proud that 100 years ago today, like, we were starting that, and what, how much has changed, how much has grown. You know, we went from a junior college to now a Research to Carnegie Classification Institution, granting, you know, certificates all the way through doctoral degrees. I think that original class of students couldn't have imagined what we would become.
And how long has planning for this centennial been in the works?
So the planning has started about a year to a year and a half ago. And then within the last 6 months, we've brought an entire planning team of about 30 folks from across campus. We have faculty representation, staff representation, students, all divisions are represented. And that really has given everybody the opportunity to come together and build something that is special to UA Little Rock and fits who we are as an institution.
And we should mention that this goes along with a pretty ambitious fundraising campaign called the UA Little Rock Centennial Campaign. How is that going?
Yes, so the Centennial Campaign is a $250 million or quarter of a billion dollar campaign. So that is the largest campaign in UA Little Rock's history. It's more than double the size of the prior campaign that we had had that was $100 million. So the campaign is, you know, continuing along the pillars that it was supposed to support are scholarship, student success, program excellence, and the living and learning environment on our campus. So scholarships is really making sure that, you know, students have access to higher education. Student success is what are those support mechanisms that they need to help them attain that degree and be successful while they're here. Program excellence is making sure that we are recognizing the important work that our faculty do in making sure that we are providing quality programming and quality education. And then finally, living and learning environment, that's making sure that our spaces are upgraded with the latest technology, that we have great spaces for our students to gather outside of the classroom to help enhance their entire college experience. And so we are going to be closing the campaign in November and hopefully, fingers crossed, celebrating a successful close, but feeling really good about where we are going into that.
And one of the most visible so far ways that you all are celebrating this centennial is something I see every day. The street signs around campus are looking a little bit different. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so, you know, that was something that was really important to us because we wanted, as the centennial was happening, we wanted to really showcase where we were in the community and wanted to create a welcoming environment for that next 100 years of students. And what better way to do that is when students drive into campus, that those street signs are visible, that they are on the UA Little Rock campus. And so those are now maroon with white lettering, and you see that Trojan head. We're actually going to be dedicating those July 16th, and that is a partnership with us in the city. So a big thanks to the mayor and his team. He will be here along with the chancellor for that dedication. And so we're very thankful that the city was a great partner in wanting to help us do that. And so we've worked together to get those signs ready to go to celebrate that centennial year.
Great. Well, what else does the university have planned for the centennial celebration?
We've taken this in kind of a couple of different ways. And so as you look at centennial work, you hear about it in terms of past, present, and future. And so as we think about the opportunity to reflect on our past, some of the things that we have that will be happening, first off, if you go to the university centennial website, it's just ualr.edu/centennial. That has a Moments of Impact. And so every single month we'll be releasing a decade of impact. So we started today with the 1920s, back when we were originally founded. The next month we'll have the 30s and so on. And so it's a really good way to kind of look back on what our history has been and celebrate the people, celebrate the moments that created UA Little Rock into what it is today. Then in February, UA Little Rock Downtown will also be launching a history exhibit. So that's something that we're very excited about, and it will allow people to come into the downtown space and get to see some of the stories and artifacts about our history. And then we are also in the process, and it will launch in the spring, of digitizing all of the yearbooks so that no matter where you are as an alum, you can go back and look at that history and remember those experiences that you had on campus. So those are some of the things that we have planned for the past. Then part of what we're working on for the present, we've already talked about the street sign dedication, but we also want to make sure that we're celebrating things as they are. So on the first day of class, you know, we'll have centennial cupcakes and treats available, very much a Treats on Trojan Way. We'll have a banner that will allow students, they'll be able to sign as part of that first day of class of that centennial year. Also, we'll be opening the planetarium and hoping to do a sneak peek at Winterfest this year. And then events like Barbecue at Bailey, Winterfest, Research in the Rock. Those are very signature campus traditions. We're going to be looking at some fun ways to elevate those this year so they feel, have a little bit of a centennial flair to them. And then as we think about the future, you know, what are the things that we need to be doing in for that next generation of students? So one of the things that we will be doing as part of that is having a time capsule that we will bury that time capsule as part of this. And so that banner and many other artifacts will go in into that. And then we're also looking at doing a service project with the community in the spring and how, you know, we can make the community a better place for the future. So lots of things happening. And then also in the spring, we will have an parade. We're calling it a centennial walk. And so it will be a parade of decades. If you think Olympics, where you have, you know, the parade of nations, we're wanting to do a parade of decades to recognize and have a picnic for all of our alumni and friends. So lots of opportunities, lots of things happening over the year, and so much to celebrate. But it's a really special time to be a Trojan.
That was Carrie Phillips, Chief Communications and Marketing Officer at UA Little Rock, talking about the university's upcoming 100th anniversary. More information is online at ualr.edu/centennial. And just a note, Little Rock Public Radio is housed on the campus of UA Little Rock. And that's it for this week. The Arkansas News Wrap is brought to you by the Arkansas Newsroom, a collaboration between KUAF in Fayetteville, KASU in Jonesboro, and Little Rock Public Radio. Until next time, I'm Daniel Breen, and this is the Arkansas News Wrap.